The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices.
Welcome to another
You'd
Monday
spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro Earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com, and remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save
big. We should have some kind of
let's get on with the show.
Music, movie, video game, TV chat. And I was looking at a show roster with a ton of bummer news. I'm trying not to make my podcast just a big old bummer every week. We're doing a pajama podcast. So this is literally what I slept in last night. I'm still wearing my pajamas. It shouldn't really be functionally any different for you if you're watching the live stream compared to how I normally dress, but you're just going to have to take my word for it that I am wearing ultra comfortable sweatpants right now instead of my normal jeans and a t-shirt combo. So we're going to hang out. We're going to keep this chill. We're going to keep this relaxed. I've got two major news stories that we should cover, that we need to cover. We are going to talk a little politics, and then we're going to talk about a smartphone that is blowing up my YouTube feed right now. And then we're going to move on, and we're just going to hang out. And this is going to be a two-hour show. We're still going to have the subreddit plug, but I don't have a script. I don't have show notes. I don't have a format. I'm really going to lean on the live chat here. So if you're in the live chat, say hello. Let's hang out. We're going to have a good time. I'm already seeing a fantastic list of names. Alice Bockley likes to sleep naked. So Alice Bockley is going to be hanging out naked in the live chat. So that's pretty cool. Tech Lovin' Mama in her PJs. Everyone say, hey, Tech Lovin' Mama. Aditya, hashtag some winging it guy. I don't need any excuse to just ramble. I can definitely ramble a ton. Should be fun. Could be an utter catastrophe train wreck of a podcast. No way to know. So you and me and all of us here in the moment right now, thank you for being along for the ride, because it could be really fun. It could be really messy. We don't know. Dave Burns, some gadget guy? Ramble? You? No. What I really need to do, especially for those of you who also do your own like live streams, like Dave Burns streams on Twitch too, everyone should give him a follow also, is what I should start doing is really trying to mimic, you know, like I'm going to listen to Dave Burns and see if I can start copying his voice so that when I'm reading your comments in the live chat, like I'm doing an accurate representation of how you guys sound. Gadget Guy 2020, best podcast ever. You know. So, we probably should still do the normal trappings of how this show is formatted. I need to let you all know that I've also been facing some just weird little tech gremlins, so I hope that all of this streams well. But this last week, I had a lot of stuff that I needed to work on. I had a lot of stuff that I needed to finish, and I was doing a whole bunch of pre-production for Newegg. So unfortunately, I've got like 6 videos in the pipeline that I haven't been able to finish. Last week was actually pretty light. So if we jump into some housekeeping real quick, I only have 2 major plugs. Here, let me get these out of the way. So housekeeping is going to be really short. Number one, I had to immediately course correct on a video that I've been trying to put together for a while. I've been having these conversations where I've been trying to encourage people to get more use out of their phones. This really seems to be a controversial topic. You know, you go into sort of echo chambery communities and subreddits and forums and you say like, well, you could do this with your phone or you could try and do that with your phone. And there's a general idea of, oh, yeah, it would be cool if I could use my phone to replace a laptop or get professional video quality out of a phone. But phones don't really do that. And then you go and look at other communities like the mobile journalism community, the hashtag Mojo community. And it's remarkable. It's remarkable what people are actually doing with their phones. And so there's this disconnect, and it's been very frustrating for me to try and deal with the communities of people that come out of like our Android, which is, it's a big popular subreddit, but it's got a very sort of focused groupthink mentality as to what makes a phone worth it. And then you look at YouTube reviewers and the way that we talk about $1,000 plus phones, and I've been struggling with this. I am not inclined to play the YouTube algorithm game, and that hurts my channel. But at the same time, I still want to have these broader conversations about getting a better bang for buck. I'm not interested in making YouTube reviews for other YouTube reviewers. I'm not interested in making videos that soothe the egos of armchair quarterbacks on popular subreddits. I don't know how to get my videos out there for average consumers, but I'm really more interested in talking to people that have voted with their wallet on a particular phone or platform. So I started shooting this video. I've gone into screen share, and this is Phone versus Gimbal Part 1, Do Gimbals Matter Anymore? And those of you who might not be hip to the word gimbal, that's that motorized video stabilizing selfie stick that you see a lot of people running around with. A number of manufacturers make them, but you know they're supposed to smooth out your movements. So I shot a bunch of samples on my V60 with a stabilizer, a DJI Osmo Mobile, and then just kind of cradling the phone in a GorillaPod, sort of an inexpensive bendy tripod. And I ran around and I shot a bunch of samples, and I was really, really with the intention of saying like, hey, this is why, a gimbal is important. This is how you can use it in your own creative endeavors. This is how you can push the boundaries on how you produce video for a smartphone. And then I got all these samples back and I'm looking at them on my monitor, and there were a handful where I had a really hard time remembering what order I'd shot, samples back and forth in. And you're like, I was having to like pixel peep crop factor, because when you use stabilizing software, it kind of crops in the image a little for you. So in the moment, like I'm getting ready to shoot this video. Oh, here's why you still need a gimbal. Immediately just start rewriting the script so I can shoot something. And this is part one of the video is out now. Only a handful of people have really been able to properly identify which samples were shot on a GorillaPod and which samples were shot on a gimbal. Smartphone video stabilization has gotten shockingly good. So, there's going to be a part two. It's probably not going to be out this week, but for anyone who does get the samples correct, and a lot of people like to go, oh, well, I can totally tell because of this, and this, but then they don't try and actually name, again, there's this sort of I'm a tech elitist, but I'm not going to put my money where my mouth is. And you're like, okay, cool. Your comment was useless. But I am going to be doing a follow-up just to talk about some of the pros and cons of using this stuff. I'm way more interested in the usage conversation than I am in let's read off the specs again kinds of videos. So here, let me get this out of the way here. And then the other video I put out was one that just took me an embarrassingly long time to finish. I threatened earlier in the year that I wanted to talk more about budgets and carrier stuff. You know, I'm on Google Fi, but I've been shopping some of the plans on T-Mobile. And the folks at Republic Wireless, more than a month ago, reached out and asked if I wanted to just take... They've got this little box that's that helps you split your phone line. It's very much like Google Voice. So you have a cell phone through Republic Wireless. You plug this little box into your router, and then you can take your calls on either the cell phone or a landline, a home phone style phone. So, you know, the service works great. The funniest part of trying to review a service that can turn your cell phone into a landline was how difficult it turned out to be for my wife and I to set up a landline. If you're anywhere near my age, or maybe you're a little younger, you remember the home phone situation. Every home had like this place where you would set up a phone. You know, there'd be like a wall mount and then like the little plug that you'd plug your phone into. And that used to be just something that existed. We don't have that. And so I didn't want this home phone receiver to live in the office, because then if I get a call, my cell phones are usually silent. I don't want this home phone to go off while I'm shooting a review. So we want this to live outside the office. Well, we've got to find a way to run the Ethernet cable. We've then got to find a way to mount it. My office is at the end of a long hallway in our condo. Like, this, it took me so much longer to review this, not for actually using the service, but just like, how much cabling do I need and where will it live? So, you know, however much effort we put into these reviews, I just need y'all to know there's a lot of back-end logistics. And every time I come up with a video that I think, hey, this is going to be simple, straightforward, let me tell you about gimbals. Whoa, that's not what I was expecting. Hey, super simple, straightforward, going to plug in a landline. This is how you can use this as a home phone service. Whoa, that didn't work. It's always like, I'll go into a video like, this is going to be a really complex topic. It's going to be hard to talk about. It's going to be really tricky to deal with. And then like that video is done in a day. This video is going to be super easy. Nothing could be easier. Why did this take me a month? Across the podcast, from Sam in the kitchen with a 100-foot curly cable that you pull into a closet to have a private talk. I remember those days. I feel those days. We had that home phone with the curly cable receiver. And because my dad, we were stationed in Ohio. And so we had this little kitchen wall bracket, and I would have to like stretch this cable all the way over to this little nook. The house we had in base housing had a breakfast nook, and that's where a tiny TV, CRT TV, lived with our Super Nintendo. And I would stretch this cable all the way, and then I would talk really super quietly into the receiver so I could talk to my friends. But I'm sure my conversations were still easily heard over in the kitchen. Just, you know, again, what we used to have to go through as kids to have any kind of social life. Ridiculous. Pushing boulders uphill, both ways, snow, all that stuff. From Hakey, we're eventually going to be those fossils who complain to younger people how technology was in our days. I'm already there. I caught myself having a conversation with my not yet quite 5-year-old daughter about how things used to work, because she was complaining about TV So this is an adorable story. You know, it happened over the weekend, and I don't like telling embarrassing stories about my daughter because we all do dumb, embarrassing things. But when I was growing up, my parents weren't sharing every single embarrassing anecdote, online for imaginary internet points. And I'd like to afford my daughter some similar consideration. It's a pajama podcast, though, so I'm going to tell this story because I think it's super cute. And I also think it's one of the major generational divides that my wife and I were going to have to address. So we're watching TV, and I get up to go start prepping some food in the kitchen. And I'm putting things together, and my daughter comes, like, running into the kitchen. And she's, like, actually a little anxious. And I'm like, "Hey, Lex, what's up?" And she's like, Daddy, I just saw on the TV, we've got to get quicker picker uppers. I'm like, what do you mean, kiddo? She's like, "I saw on the TV, they said it picks up faster than other paper towels. So we need quicker picker uppers." Like, no, kiddo, those are just paper towels. We've got paper towels. Do you need a paper towel? Like, I'm not quite understanding the urgency here. And, you know, unraveling, my daughter watches so little traditional broadcast TV, she doesn't grok commercials. Commercials are just other parts of broadcasts and are treated with the same veracity and truthiness as the shows and the news and everything else. We stream content. We watch rips of content. She has encountered so few of these marketing materials that she hasn't started developing the radar to determine show from advertisement. Unlike how many of us grew up, where after a point you kind of understand, like, commercials and the influence that they have, and like, oh, well, this isn't a part of the show, this is just trying to get me to buy something. My wife and I were actually going to have to teach the idea of commercials as part of, like, media literacy. You know, like, this is the show you're watching, but when mommy and daddy watch TV on something else, as opposed to Netflix or Amazon or Disney, when you see a different app and you see these mini programs, that's not real. As Goran Petrovic, not all paper towels are made equal. Simon says, "No, some things you can skimp out on, but sometimes brand names are just the best." Okay, so in our household, if we're label whores at all, often it's Kirkland. We have our Costco membership. I am a big fan of the Kirkland label, and, you know, when we go out and buy paper towels, it's an insane quantity of paper towels that will last us a really long time. But again, it was just that really cute and hilarious and worrying anecdote, watching my daughter's behavior, something my wife and I just completely take for granted. And yet we've raised her for the TV that she watches, the entertainment that she consumes. We've done actually a pretty good job of not bombarding her with commercials. Like, she doesn't watch a ton of broadcast Nickelodeon because it's annoying to us to have to sit through so many commercials. Now we're actually going to have to backtrack on some of that to teach her, to, like, actually engage with her. Some of this stuff is real and some of this stuff is marketing. So here's how to deal with marketing. Dave Burns, too. Costco is my lifeblood. Agreed. This podcast not sponsored by Costco. So, moving right along. One of the reasons why housekeeping was so short, barring my daughter's anecdote there, one of the things that I'm working on and I'm finally proofing is the revisions for my photography book. So if you're hip to take better photos, smartphone photography for noobs, version 1.2.3 is currently available on Amazon Kindle, and I've finished all of my revisions for 1.2.4. I'm going through proofreading it right now. My wife is kind of helping out with that, and hopefully that will be uploaded by the end of the week. But I took some time out. Like I said, I've been struggling with sort of YouTube and algorithms and just trying to find some fun in tech reviewing again, where so many of my videos have been getting kind of angry. And when I feel that, like at the end of last year, I was feeling like, man, I'm starting to get kind of mean. I need to back off and refocus on things that don't cause me so much grief. And was kind of getting that, falling into some of those patterns again. So I took last week to really, like, I've been working on these passages. I've got a new chapter on image sensors, a whole ton of revisions. Like my, I have a chapter in the book talking about different camera apps, you know, like here's Android, iOS, and Windows Phone. And like, you know, I haven't updated that passage since the book came out. There isn't an Android camera app anymore. So put all those pieces, refined all of that language, a ton of formatting errors from when I uploaded the book last time to Amazon that I just never noticed. Like chapter headings that were just completely different fonts. So if you want a good chuckle, if you pick up the book now, you'll see a lot of mistakes that are going to get corrected in the next week. But if you've already purchased the book, if you have the book 1.2.3 on Amazon Kindle, then you'll automatically be updated once my revisions go through. It usually takes about a week once I've uploaded it. So hopefully in 2 weeks, all of that will be live for people to check out. Take better photos, smartphone photography for noobs, $3.99. Or if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can read it as included in your Kindle Unlimited subscription. So let's cover the heavy news first. I got to get this out of the way here and get that out of the way there. So last week, where is it? There we go. Not last week. When was this? 5 days ago. Last week. I don't know if any of y'all caught this. It was a major political story. The heads of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google all were testifying before a House Judiciary Committee. Dave Burns. Oh, God, I love hating Mondays. So, I was on stream for 5 hours and I still didn't finish the House meeting, the House Judiciary Committee. It went on longer. They did another round of questioning that I just couldn't sit through. But it was a really heady discussion of, again, four of the largest names in tech, Apple, Google, Amazon, and Facebook. We shared a number of jokes at Microsoft's expense. Like apparently Microsoft isn't dangerous anymore, and that they're not a part of this hearing. Dave Burns, it was hard to watch. So it was a lot. It started late. I think, you know, the smart money was on either Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg holding up the whole stream and committee. So it started an hour late, but you know, getting into some significant conversations and topics on anti-competitive behavior, companies that might have abused their market position, their size. And it was frustrating because, like, it took an entire round of questioning before anyone even bothered trying to talk to Jeff Bezos. But as often happens, for how long and how frustrating this stream was, if you go through and you listen to sort of media analysts or market analysts try to sum up this meeting, you miss a lot of the nuance. We had Tim Cook, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, and Sundar Pichai under oath. That's really important. This is part of a years-long investigation by members of the House of Representatives to start examining the big business practices of big tech. A bunch of House members on this committee completely missed the point. You know, we had a couple people talking about, well, Facebook, you're a monopoly. And you're like, by any definition of monopoly, Facebook is not a monopoly. So stop grandstanding and stop trying to win, you know, CNN points that your soundbite isn't going to play. But I have to give a huge shout out to Representative Jayapal out of Washington. She was dogged. Absolutely my favorite lines of questioning. Brutal, concise, to the point, building to a, because every House member only gets 5 minutes to ask their questions. Some people would prattle on. Again, elected officials trying to score their points, you know, getting their sound bites, getting their quips. It's all on the record. So let me tell you a story about this one person who told me how Amazon was mean to them. Like, not helpful. Again, if we're looking at antitrust, your folksy anecdote here doesn't help. But Jayapal out of Washington, whew, brutal. If you watch nothing else, just watch her clips from these testimonies, because she was exceedingly enjoyable to watch investigate this. But we got some really interesting insight into how the CEOs of these companies conduct themselves, represent themselves, have to play the political game. You know, out of the four companies, I was kind of curious why Apple was included as such a, you know, as a commiserate or correlating threat. You know, we think about big data, and we think about online abuse and anti-consumer behavior, and I have some serious issues with Apple's philosophies, with their with the way that they have fought right to repair legislation. But I don't look at Apple as the same kind of anti-consumer market threat that Amazon can represent, as I stream this on Twitch. or how Facebook might be doing business with consumer data, or how Google might be manipulating content feeds on YouTube. Apple didn't quite fit into that equation for me, but the line of questioning as it related to how business is conducted on the App Store and how it wasn't difficult. For as much as I respect Tim Cook, and he is a great statesman, like he represents Apple well. He was, I mean, his presence under questioning was phenomenally considered and really thoughtful. And again, his job is to try and make as much money for shareholders as possible and then be the public face of this corporation. He was incredible when he was under scrutiny, when he was being questioned. But it wasn't difficult to ask some leading questions about App Store policy and then immediately point to Apple App Store policy that runs contradictory to what he had said. You know, like, well, everyone gets the same opportunities on the App Store. Well, what about these other things where some people get different commissions? Oh, well, there are benchmarks where people can hit those benchmarks and then they'll be charged different rates on their commissions. And is anything stopping Apple from raising that commission? We've never raised the commission, but is anything stopping Apple from raising that commission? And so it was really telling why you would still want to consider antitrust or anti-consumer behavior, even from Apple's perspective. While I don't know that there's as significant a harm, they wield this inordinate amount of power on the mobile app landscape. And you know, in a way that Google only dreams, only wishes they could. it was good times. So I'm not sure I would recommend people sit through hours, but there were some telling, some really important moments that you got Jeff Bezos on the record that they've got an internal policy as to how they should be handling competitor data. And he wasn't equipped to answer whether or not they even hold to their own internal structure that, oh yeah, well, we've got rules. So what, how do you enforce those rules? I don't know. We might not be. And you're like, don't you think this is a serious conflict of interest? And you're like, well, I'll look into what our policies are. And you're like, you're the CEO of Amazon. You're valued as one of the wealthiest people on this planet. Don't you think you should have a better understanding of how Amazon is able to profit from other companies doing business with Amazon, and that gives Amazon an unfair competitive advantage in the landscape? Oh, well, I don't see it like that. So yeah, it was for all of the complaining that we've levied. You know, remember the first time Mark Zuckerberg testified before one of these House committees, and he wasn't under oath, and the conversation was just laughably out of date. You know, the members of the committee mostly completely misunderstood some of the technological challenges. I can't think of many instances in this where we saw someone completely off the pulse. What's his name? Oh, I can't remember his name. Sensenbrenner? Anyway, we got one of those questions where someone was going to stick it to Mark Zuckerberg about how Facebook discriminates against conservatives, and then asked a bunch of questions about Don Jr. being removed from Twitter. And you're like, okay, that deserves to be a sound clip of out of touch House of Representatives member. You know, like, here's someone has Mark Zuckerberg sitting right before them and starts asking questions about, you know, well, why would you remove Don Jr.'s, you know, speech? And you're like, well, I think you're talking about Twitter. I'm not representing Twitter. I'm representing Facebook. And that was an embarrassing moment. From JJ4084. Yeah, the old guy, Sensenbrenner. Simon says hypno. I can't get the glottal because it sounded like he had just wolfed down a really fatty, cheesy Big Mac.
Mr. Zuckerberg, are you Tom from the MySpace?
I mean, Tom was always in my top eight. Tom was a good guy. I mean, I feel like the Democrats did a better job of talking about actual business policy. And I was really concerned that a few of the Republicans seemed to advocate for weakening the First Amendment and interfering with the business practices of private corporations. It was a really interesting back and forth. I don't know that I'd sit through the whole thing. I know I wouldn't sit through it again. But the political process here is now starting to get savvier, and they're starting to do a better job of, they're starting to do a better job of figuring out Silicon Valley, and that Silicon Valley isn't liberal or conservative in the ways that we've traditionally examined corporations and businesses and CEOs. And this is a completely different and much more fluid industry. But we have a few really savvy lawmakers out there that are starting, like, they've got fingertip grips on this industry now in following. When they say this, that's a moving target. When they make this claim, it's not difficult to examine the honesty of that claim. Google, Sundar Pichai. I mean, you almost feel bad for him because he took the brunt of the hardest hitting questions throughout the committee that I stayed to watch. And a lot of it, I mean, they're trying to boil down points to yes or no questions, yes or no answers. And he's trying to explain nuance. And that's really difficult when someone's got 5 minutes to question you. They're going to try and pin you on very specific instances and very specific points of data. But we get to the end of some of these questions, and, you know, like, he's just like, you can tell he's getting hit pretty hard. But we get to the end of some of these questions, and you're starting to see they're following up on claims, and they're starting to track these companies better. That is the evolution of our political process. Our lawmakers have been woefully out of date as it pertains to technology. Some of them are starting to get it. Some of them are starting to hold on to this. Again, the App Store thing, talking to Apple, it was a genius line of questioning to say, like, well, all companies are treated equal. Yes. Well, what about commissions? All companies are charged the same for commissions. What about these companies? Those companies are different. I mean, that's literally like the summation in the process that they went through. And I don't believe Tim Cook was prepared for that. I'm actually kind of surprised that none of these CEOs spent any time talking to their legal counsel. Because again, now they're under oath. This is a different game. So that's the gig. We don't have to keep talking about this anymore. We do have some happy stuff and some other more fun stuff. But for someone who's been really engaged in the political process, and I'm hoping to share some of this passion, because I'm kind of tired. I'm kind of tired of people who don't get tech like we do coming up with all the rules for how we should use tech. I know there's this kind of like safe, common idea of, well, we're techies and we care about megapixels and giggle flips and this is what we're going to focus on. And you know, we're above the politics. We're not going to sit here and talk politics, but literally everything is politics. And we've been having these conversations about broadband adoption. 60 Minutes just put out another piece. David Pogue went and did an investigative piece on how many Americans might not really have broadband. It could be as much as half the population of our country actually does not have access to competitive broadband speeds. Literally, I mean, like, broadband is defined by the FCC, so like DSL, you know? Talking about broadband adoption, net neutrality, gambling and video games, everything comes down to what is our relationship with a government, with public policy, and how do we communicate that with other people? How do we work in these systems and regulate these systems and make sure people aren't getting left behind and people aren't getting abused? If we want the rules to make sense, we need to contribute to the conversation. And again, I'm preaching to the choir if you've been streaming any of my podcasts, but again, I want to keep highlighting that. We should be leading some of these discussions and we should be contributing to conversations about public policy because we get this stuff. So for those out there who get like, ooh, politics. No, I mean, contribute. Be a part of this conversation. Join this conversation, because otherwise you're going to leave it to dudes like Sensenbrenner who asked Mark Zuckerberg about why Twitter was taking down tweets. You know, like, that's a major ranking member of a judiciary committee who's going to come up with the laws that govern how we use this stuff. So we can do better than that. All right. Who wants to talk about the Pixel? I mean, it's the Pixel Pajama Podcast. Anyone? Anyone? I'm going to hold for just a second while I drink some water from this tasty, delicious megapixel mug. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. Dave Burns wants to talk about the Pixel. Tana So Lit wants to talk about the Pixel. Rick Ayers, that's why he's here. Simon says, Hypno, it looks grand, but it's not for me. Tana So Lit, Team Pixel, yes sir, yes sir. Two Spirits does not. Everyone say, aw, Two Spirits, you don't want to talk about a fun phone, I guess. Pixel 4a, the will they, won't they, will they do it, won't they do it? Now, who's been following the actual techie conversation on the Pixel 4a? Don't you think we've seen a lot of drama dancing? I'm over the Pixel. Google should just scrap this year. What about pricing? It's gonna be too expensive. The Nord is gonna win the day. Oh, but the iPhone SE. Pixel 4a is finally here. It's finally available to pre-order. And it looks like it's gonna be a solid, competitive mid-ranger device. I'm streaming the product page now where you can go and pre-order. Starting at $349. It looks like it's only going to come in black to start. It's only going to be black to launch. Looks like a little baby Pixel 4. Of course, one of the major things that they're going to highlight is photography. I don't care who you are or how good you are at tech. If we're really talking about an average consumer photography experience, Google's image manipulation is second to none. You know, this is the closest you get to a shutter button response. I don't love the square camera module with only one little camera sensor and a flash. I kind of wish that were a bit more like the Pixel 3a. But for those of you who seem to get angsty about notches, there's a hole punch. They even have a top notch photos taken up a notch, which is funny because it doesn't have a notch. See, it's kind of punny. Oh, you Pixel scamps, you're hilarious. But everything seems to be on point here. A phone that starts at $350. Oh, let me go into the tech specs and we'll just... Since everyone loves to read off the tech specs. The 3100 milliamp hour battery, 6 gigabytes of RAM, 128 gigabytes of storage. Not 64 for $400, but 128. And I'll be curious to see... Oh, they don't list it here. But something tells me that we'll also get an upgrade to the type of storage, too. That's what I'm kind of curious to see. We're going to see the 12-megapixel camera, 1.4 micron pixel. So this is a really standard camera sensor we've been... This is a similar camera sensor to what we've been using since the Galaxy S7. Really, really well understood. I'm not seeing any deal breakers here. $350 and we're going to get a polycarbonate Gorilla Glass covered smartphone that's probably going to feel snappier than its specs would otherwise indicate and is going to be a completely capable performer. Like I'm irrationally excited about the showdown for Pixel 4a, iPhone SE, and then mixing in a few other devices like a TCL 10 Pro. This to me is going to be a much more interesting fight than some of the top end. Like I'm honestly not interested at all about wrapping up the year with Note 20 and iPhone 12. I'm honestly not. This fight to me, especially after spending time with the V60, spending time with the OnePlus 8 Pro, some of the compromises that companies make to fit certain features and certain improvements under different price points. I get it, but that to me is one of the least exciting consumer showdowns. It's a phone that with 5G is going to be $1,400 against a phone that's going to be $1,500. And I don't see where that lights up people who really use their phones, like daily driver smartphone users. For all of this breathless nerd commentary about phones that are popular on YouTube, I go and I talk to my family and friends and... Oh man, they're excited about iPhone SE. Oh man, they're excited about a $350 Google iPhone. And it doesn't matter to them that this is technically late. You know, have you seen those headlines? You know, oh, Pixel 4a, better late than never, I guess. Consumers don't care. Oh boy, do these average consumers that we're supposed to be protecting with our tech commentary don't care. They don't listen to us. They don't care what we have to say. They're going to go into a carrier store and see a Google iPhone for $350 and an Apple iPhone for $400. Oh, these look pretty good. Game over. Story done. And we can sit here and pan Pixel 4a. Just like, remember, last year, how many major techies were trash-talking the Pixel 3a, and then the Pixel 3a all by itself doubled the number of pixels out in the wild, right? My brother, my sister, and my brother-in-law all on Pixel 3As now. Literally could not be happier with phone purchases. My mom's on a OnePlus 6T. She's thinking about a Pixel. My dad used to have a Pixel 2. He got upgraded to a Galaxy S9. He's thinking about going back to a Pixel. Like, we get locked in these echo chambers. And apologies if you're coming from a major subreddit where there's a right way to be Android and a wrong way to be Android. We get locked in these, like, YouTube algorithm echo chambers. I see a lot of Samsung. Samsung spends a lot on marketing. They're the most popular. They sell the most. They must be the foregone conclusion, and everything's graded against that. We completely lose sight of the fact that other players have been remarkably competitive in smaller demographics. We can trump up OnePlus. I'm a big fan of the OnePlus brand. The OnePlus 8 Pro kind of rocks my socks, especially if we're looking at some of the finer photography differences between the OnePlus 8 Pro camera sensor and the V60 camera sensor and Quad Bear and how it treats HDR. Like, this is a company that is phenomenally well improved for most of the things that they've been criticizing. So look at the explosion of, like, Nord commentary. If we were to follow metrics and algorithms and YouTube and ad revenue, it gives us a warped idea of how competitive these companies are. We forget Samsung, about 26% of the market, maybe a little higher now. The A51 sold phenomenally well, and the A51 is a much more exciting phone for a broader consumer base. But still, I'd roughly say between 25 and 27% of the North American market. For all of the money that Samsung spends on marketing, only about half of every Android phone, that's huge, but only about half of every Android phone sold in North America is a Samsung. LG, Google, I forget who's under that, but I think OnePlus is still out of the top five in all devices sold. They might have scratched that up closer on the OnePlus 8. But I don't think they have, and the Nord hasn't launched here in the United States. So there's this huge power vacuum. Pixel 4a, $350. That's going up against, like, Motorola's, and there are a handful of unlocked Sonys, like an Xperia 10 Mark II. I guess you can fit into that price window. But there's not a ton of high-profile competition for a new purpose-built sub-$400 phone. Exciting, because I really want to throw this up against a TCL 10 Pro. That's going to be a fun showdown, especially with some of these price differences. $50 here gets you a little bit more storage, but $50 there might give you more cameras. You know, like that. Now we're getting into, you know, really fine and granular differences moving back and forth. Pixel 3a was such a refreshing change of pace from what mid-rangers used to feel like. You know, the original iPhone SE took us through a broad stretch. But Pixel 3a kind of helped kick open a door and sort of slapped a little attention into consumers that, what are you doing on your phone? Do you need a $1,200 phone? You probably don't. So that to me is a much more critical part of this conversation. So, and again, I'm coming at this from a North American perspective. I'm already seeing in my chat, you know, like, oh, well, OnePlus is targeting India, and oh, look at Realme and Oppo and Xiaomi. We don't get them. We don't get those here. I'm spending some time with the Black Shark. It's a cool little phone. I get why it's got some gaming chops. It's powerful. It's, you know, it's going to be cheaper. Doesn't really come here. So when I talk to my brother, my sister, my brother-in-law, my mom, my dad, my grandmother, my aunts, my uncles, I'm not going to recommend importing a Xiaomi. That's not going to happen. Tana so lit. Yep. The A is killing it. Actually, and that'll go for Galaxy A series and Pixel A series. I'm very positive on where what we're doing with these sort of more refined consumer targeted devices. It used to be, you know, like a mid-ranger phone on a mid-ranger chipset was just painful. That's not true anymore. Excuse me. JJ4884, Pixel and Nord are getting strong traction. Meanwhile, Nokia in the corner with number one ranking and Android One updates. So part of the issue that I've had, we look at another brand. There was some recent HMD noise. I can't remember his name now, but a former Nokia figure is coming back to run Nokia under HMD. And now I can't remember his name. And I think it's a smart play. But the problem I've had is Nokia's relationship with North America is still kind of distant. And the way that they handled an ambitious, I mean, I think they bit off more than they could chew, but the Nokia 9 gave me some concerns over Nokia positioning cool new features against the promises of Android One as a platform. And with so many phones, I fear that HMD is also kind of a lottery. Maybe you get the Nokia that gets all of the great updates and bug fixes and support and attention, and maybe you don't. My Nokia 9 PureView, I don't feel got the attention, the software polish, and the refinement that a phone of that class and at that price really deserved to get. The Pixel 4a is a far less ambitious phone. It's a purpose-built mid-ranger, and it's a Pixel. This is another thing too. I mean, like, I feel like we're going to have a lot of people intentionally missing the point. When I'm going to put together a comparison between a TCL 10 Pro, which full MSRP is around $450, and a Pixel 4a, which full MSRP is around $350, and we've got a $100 price difference between these two handsets. It's not a spec sheet to spec sheet conversation. For a $100 difference, TCL is going to focus on a certain multimedia presentation and wow you with cameras and SD card expansion and all of the bells and whistles. For $350, the Pixel 4a is going to be a streamlined, aggressively focused package for Google software and services. And I really feel like the Pixel 4 got shafted in the tech community by people intentionally missing the point of what the Pixel 4 represented. Every time I go back to my Pixel 4 XL, I have a really hard time taking my SIM card back out of that phone. There is a polish, a focus, a services-based idea of using Google on a slab of glass. And the Pixel 4, when you live with it, is a completely different experience than when you kind of poke at it for a couple days and then you come up with a grand review of why it's not worth it for the money. It's because I read the spec sheet and it doesn't have all the specs that I mean, it doesn't even have an ultra-wide camera that I never used to care about. When LG and Huawei had ultra-wide cameras, they were just sort of nice things to have. Oh, but now Apple has an ultra-wide camera and it's a deal-breaker on the Pixel. I don't buy that. It's the drama dance. It's disingenuous commentary where people are looking for reasons for phones to fail instead of saying it might be a smaller group of people that love this phone, but for the people that these features apply to, this phone is amazing. That the Pixel 4 deserved positive reviews for a smaller group of consumers. The Pixel 4a, much broader consumer base. There are so many people that I can now look at and think, you will do really well on this phone. This phone will not compromise you. This phone will not hamstring you. And it's going to be less than half of what like your Galaxy S20 purchase is going to be, even with the Galaxy S20 on sale. Sorry, I've been neglecting the chat. Let me kind of go back through some of this chat here. Dave Burns, LG is making the most interesting phones in North America right now. I really like LG's pivot. I just wish they'd market. Again, I think the last year's LGs were some of the most interesting phones on the market last year, and they're a course change for being a bit more budget conscious. Also really cool. I wish LG were talking about some of these differences better. Tana So Lit has to like the way a phone looks. Let me get this out of the way. Across the podcast, Nokia would be cool. They are a nostalgic pick for me because of the Lumias. And it's great seeing like PureView branding back on a phone. But it's a similar issue that I've got with, say, Sony. Only I think Sony does a better job of supporting fewer phones with software updates. You know, again, you'll hear some of this commentary and someone made an offhand comment about, well, Sony and support. You're like, but where does that come from? Because every Sony I've had has had really long-lived bug fixes and security updates and updates. They don't always get, you know, 3 years of operating system updates. But, like, I was getting Xperia 1, XZ1 bug fixes into year 3. You know, and Sony doesn't really support North America. But their phones have been phenomenally long-lived. So these casually offered criticisms from reviewers don't seem to be informed by real long-term usage. And again, at this point, I think I might just buy it off of Becca, who still wishes to remain properly pseudonymed, sent me over the Xperia 1 Mark 1. I think I might just buy it from her. But you know, I just got another update on the Xperia 1 from last year. You know, again, this support has been pretty well covered. But again, the issue I have with Nokia is how do I have that conversation with someone looking to shop an unlocked phone and then take it to their carrier, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I have some family members that are totally game for, you know, saving a little cash, buying a phone outright and popping in a SIM card. I have some family members that won't be able to handle any kind of conversation with their carrier about how to support a phone that they didn't buy through their carrier. And so we need options that kind of cover that broad of a spectrum of consumers. That's average consumers. That's a huge gap of experience levels and tech savviness. Dave Burns too. 6 months later, I was wrong. The battery life is meh, but the Pixel 4 is so amazing. Isn't it interesting? I was going back through my blog archives and I found a really snarky editorial that I wrote about John Redinger. It was before I knew him as well as I do now, but it's why I appreciate John's pivot on his own personal channel, as opposed to trying to be an objective reviewer. I around the launch of the Surface 2, we saw a ton of videos coming out backtracking what the reviewer had said about the Surface 1 and Windows 8. We remember viscerally the launch of Windows 8 and the original Surface and how terrible it was and how, you know, rough around the edges the first Surface was, and Windows 8, you don't have the start button anymore, and isn't it weird that there's a tablet mode and a desktop mode? What we forget are how many reviewers completely backtracked on those criticisms shortly before Microsoft started sending out Surface 2s. And I was pointing to John very specifically, but he was an example of that trend where Surface 2's coming out and I want to make sure I can still get my review unit and run my commentary and these different, but wouldn't you know it, from my original review months later, I started using the Surface and a lot of this is way more elegant than I realized it was. And let me show you these things that are actually really cool about the Surface. And that's the drama dance. The drama dance is all about, this is my expectation, and boy howdy was my expectation subverted. And we're seeing this game play out over and over and over, right? You know, it's a new Galaxy Note's going to be coming out. How many videos do you think we're going to see where people are like, oh, I'm switching now, Galaxy. Whew, this new Note looks amazing. And I'm sure Samsung has fixed all of those issues from the Galaxy S20, and the Note's not going to be just another S20 with an S Pen. You know, and then once the new iPhone comes out, we're going to see a bunch of flip-flops again. You're like, oh, Apple, through sheer meritocracy, totally won me back. It has nothing to do with the fact that an Apple video where I act like my mind's somehow been changed with a wacky thumbnail that I'm going to be, it's totally honest. But it has nothing to do with YouTube rewarding this type of echo chamber churn of the same content over and over and over again, where I just confirm the bias of an audience that's larger as opposed to having any kind of insightful commentary. Pixels aren't as popular, so now we've got to pretend like there's some grand surprise here, where we can't just focus on the fact that it's a $350 phone that looks like it's going to kick ass. It looks like it's going to be a great option, and it looks like it's going to be competitive in a market where we don't have a lot of good choice at this price tier. And we've got to look at companies where it really doesn't seem to be difficult to build a phone based on certain types of services and data and sell it at a razor thin margin, right? Like Oppo's business model, Xiaomi's business model. I still feel it's worth entertaining conversations about things like data privacy, data security. We can kind of throw up our hands and say, oh, if you use a smartphone, you don't have any privacy. But I do feel it's fair to say, like, to what level and to what degree is my data being utilized to subsidize the cost of a super cheap phone? Some people are going to be comfortable with that. Some people are going to work around it. Some people are savvy enough to flash different ROMs. You know, I can't recommend that to my parents. My PhD carrying engineer dad, my mom with a master's in computer science, that's not going to fly. It's funny because my mom uses a OnePlus 6T, but she's got that thing on lock. You know, like what services she uses on her phone are pretty well constrained. But again, I'm not going to tell her to import, you know, a Black Shark just because it's a little bit more powerful and you can get it for $50 cheaper. A Pixel is a completely different quality of conversation. You know, it's a software services built phone that it's competing in a different way than just, can I fit a ton of hardware features into $500? And that's really, I think, gonna be what moves the needle on some of this consumer conversation. From TwoSpirits411, what about getting the Pixel and using it on Google Fi? Well, I'll be using it on Google Fi. I'm still a Google Fi subscriber. Google Fi has actually helped out that they just flipped the switch on T-Mobile 5G. That's been really nice considering how terrible my LTE is in this in the gadget lab. From Two Spirits, too many tech YouTubers do that. Simon says Hypno, screw those thumbnail guys. From Vince Nouveau, I loathe wacky thumbnails. So again, it's Simon says Hypno, I changed my mind. I'm switching. I'm going to Samsung, going bi, going vegan, voting for Trump. From across the podcast, will the Pixel 4a kick my ass? So the Pixel 3a rocked my socks. If we're using different like cultural idioms to describe things what are cool and things what are lame. I still haven't run into the individual who had specified concerns where the Pixel 3a couldn't achieve daily driver smartphone use. That was a really roundabout way of saying, like, I talk to people and I put the phone in their hands and they kind of poke around on the phone. They go, oh, well, that's kind of cool. And oh, I like this. And oh, yeah, the camera, that looks really cool. That's a pretty good camera. And then I would tell them the price. And even at launch, it's a $400 phone. And not like $400 on contract, like $400, you're done, you own the phone, you go on with your life. I haven't encountered anyone where they could properly point to a usage deal breaker. You want to render HD video from your phone? The Pixel 3a could do it. You want to shoot respectably good 4K video? It, you know, gets a little funky at night the way that it does the stabilization, but supposedly, consumers don't do things with their phones, but they care about advanced camera features. Have you ever noticed that? Like, oh, I'm really worried about the average consumer experience, and it doesn't have 4K 60, you know, 60 frame per second 4K video. But in my next breath, I'm going to tell you how no user should ever have to dig through settings, and the out-of-the-box experience is what consumers really care about. You know, isn't that a disconnect? Isn't that like a logical, you know, like a huge logical separation in how we talk about phones? I feel like that's worthy of some scrutiny. From Rue Sunshine, an example of the flip-flop. Curved screens are so beautiful. And then flat screens are more useful. Whatever Samsung does. That's the right thing to do. Daybone9, Juan, do you pay extra for 5G on Fi? No. It didn't change my bill at all. Literally, like, Google Fi just flipped the switch. And so if you're in line with T-Mobile Towers and you get some access to 5G, it didn't change my bill at all. And I could probably shop Google Fi and save a little cash because I'm not using nearly as much mobile data as I used to, like back last year where we would occasionally travel and do other things. But yeah, I was using the Pixel and the Pixel 4 XL and the LG G8. My SIM card was kind of popping back and forth between those two a lot. And so both of those are LTE only devices. And when I got the T-Mobile version of the V60, it came with a loaner SIM. Like, I got a month of T-Mobile data on the V60. And on a whim, I was like, it's a T-Mobile phone. It should fire up just fine. I'm on Google Fi. I guess I could go back to LTE after kind of being a little spoiled with this 5G. And I popped in the Google Fi, little Google Fi carrier, you know, graphic pops up in the corner and then 5G lights up. So they didn't even announce it. Like, it wasn't like I got an email from Google Fi. Oh, by the way, we've brokered a deal with T-Mobile and now you have 5G. It just turned on. So the way that Google Fi piggybacks is like really direct. Whatever T-Mobile does, you basically get T-Mobile on Fi. Well, it helped. It helped a lot. And from Two Spirits, it's a $399 phone. No, it's way too cheap. I need a $1 million phone. See, this is the conditioning, though. You know, what we've made popular is not really in line with how the market really works. Back during like the Moto G4 days, I was very selective about how I would recommend $300 phones. And don't forget, I mean, like a $300 phone was sort of a half price device because a premium phone was only going to be about $650 to $700. But when we were talking those old like Snapdragon 614s and like maybe it had a gig of RAM, maybe it had two, 8 gigabytes of storage. Ooh, I'm going to upgrade to 16 gig of storage. Back when that was what a mid-ranger was, that experience could be punishing. You had to be very selective about the type of consumer who would pick up that phone, really try to use it as a daily driver, and understand the compromises. If I put a Pixel 3a in someone's hands today, they will not feel the storage, the eMMC. It doesn't respond like a phone with slower storage. They're not going to feel that Snapdragon 660. It's going to feel the same when they pick up a $300 or $400 phone and a $1,000 phone, when they go and fire up Twitter, when they log into their Facebook, when they share a photo on Instagram. They feel the same. And you lose in some of those magical moments where, like, if I had put a $1,000 Samsung into my sister's hands, she would have liked it. She was coming off of a Moto G4, which she had had for like around 4 years. But I put a Pixel 3a in her hands and she took a photo of her black cat, something her old phone could not do, could not expose for a black cat in indoor lighting. And then she immediately, on one shutter press, got a photo of her cat where her cat was distinguished from the shadows in the background of the photo. And then I told her that phone is $400. And she literally put the phone down and picked up a laptop and went to Google and bought it. She loved the experience of the phone first. And then she was impressed by the price. And that's where mid-rangers are today. I can put a TCL 10 Pro in your hand. I can put an iPhone SE in your hand. I'm sure the Pixel 4a is going to be the same. I'm going to put it in your hand and you're going to love that first. And then you're going to see this is less than half the price. The Pixel 4a is going to be a third the price of a Galaxy S20 Plus. Galaxy S20 Plus is going to do almost everything better, but not by 3 times the price better. And that's what's getting me lit up. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
The Android Police Podcast comes at you 3 times a week to talk about the latest in Android news and to chat with our colleagues in tech media about wider subjects like the auto industry and what we do at trade shows. And we also do a fun Q&A stream each week, too. Catch us live on twitch.tv/AndroidPolice or listen anywhere you get your podcasts.
Simon says, "No, I love being a T-Mobile customer in the States. Some of these network upgrades have been pretty decent." So, I mean, again, there are interesting fights to be had, you know. So Necromage and Rue Sunshine are talking back and forth about iPhone SE versus Pixel 4a, or again, any of these sort of mid-ranger phones stuff in there. We've got to pick and choose, right? One feature does not define an entire smartphone. And the iPhone SE is an iPhone 8 with an upgraded engine and the iPhone XR camera sensor. Fuel tank is really small, and the screen, it's just okay. It's not a great display. But again, that doesn't count against the people that I think will be a good fit for the iPhone SE. The people that I really think are going to gel with the iPhone SE is that it's a snappy little Mighty Mouse, and it's one of the best one-handed smartphone experiences on the market today. If your daily driver needs are very communications-based, quick text replies, got to shoot a couple photos, snapshotty photos of you know, like family or friends or your food, it does all that exceedingly well. It's not a very good multimedia experience. It's for as powerful as it is, it's not a very good gaming experience. Again, we know that we can carve out these pros and cons. Really, what we're looking at is this going to be a good fight? No one would suggest that the Pixel 4a, isn't going to lose major showdowns for processing power. If I need to render 4K video from a phone, I'm going to prefer doing that on an iPhone SE over doing that on a Pixel 4a. Sure. I feel like that's pretty easy to grok. But it's breaking down all of the other little nuanced elements. It's, you know, starting off with twice as much storage for $50 less. It's having a nicer screen for $50 less. It's having a slightly larger battery, where I would expect on the lower power chipset, you're going to be reaching for the charge cable a lot less frequently. The iPhone SE is going to bring wireless charging. Cool. But you're going to spend more time with the iPhone SE topping off the battery. So that's where this fight makes this. That's where this fight gets more interesting. Once you get out of being a chipset cheapskate, where I'll sacrifice every other quality of life feature to get the fastest chip, once we sort of move away from that tech discussion, the more well-rounded phone becomes a bit more interesting to talk about. And from Rue Sunshine, we've been setting this expectation. One must spend greater than $500 for a decent phone, contradictory to the fact that lower-priced phones have become so much better. And again, it's shocking. I mean, I've been going back and looking through some of my ridiculous phone archive, and I've got some old mini phones and light phones and previous mid-rangers, and they weren't fun to use. They could get the job done, but they weren't fun. I would say since the original iPhone SE, we've been steadily seeing that progress, where a phone at a third the price of your premium phone market is now exceedingly good hardware, covering a huge consumer base, and they would do well with the phone, not compromised on the phone. Gary the Fireman, I'm angry I wasn't selected by Google to be in their Pixel Superfan program. We're all in this boat together. I'm not. I wasn't under embargo. It's the same situation, you know. Like I've been working very aggressively to not play the YouTube, YouTube algorithm game. I want to take my time. If something's called a review, those videos have been trashed on YouTube. You know, like my OnePlus 8 Pro review took a while. I really wanted to wrap my brain around the OnePlus 8 Pro. But, you know, that meant my video was late and people didn't share it and it didn't get a lot of chatter and the numbers on it were terrible. So we're all kind of in this system now. All of the people who went hands-on early, they get to define the conversation. Whenever I get my hands on this phone, I don't know that I'm going to be getting my Team Pixel edition Pixel 4a, but I'm going to be a week late to talking about it as a brand new phone. All of the techies will have made up their minds on the device. Got a whole YouTube feed full of videos that are kind of just reading off the specs and showing like four or five sample images that I shot off my back porch as fast as I could, just so I could breathlessly praise how good the pixel image image manipulation is. And that's it. As soon as I get the phone, I'm already working from an algorithm deficit. It's not going to be the trendy, hot topic. We'll have already moved on. And however I format my conversation on it, it's going to be increasingly difficult to shoot video and take the time and edit and render and upload, knowing that it's not going to get a fraction of the ad revenue. It's not going to get a fraction of the viewership. It's rough. It sucks so much of the fun out of being a tech reviewer. Totally a first world problem, but, you know, my channel used to actually reach people that were subscribed to my channel. Now, YouTube increasingly seems to put me on the back burner. Whether it's my commentary not reaching a zeitgeist or people not really, you know, following what they subscribe, whatever the reasoning might be. But, you know, reach and scope and viewership and conversations, and it increasingly kind of pushes me towards like, well, maybe I turn this into a written piece for my blog, or maybe I just have this conversation with my Patreon. You know, like, less and less keeps me invested in trying to satisfy the YouTube algorithm, the holy upon high mountain algorithm that we all must appease at. It's not the gig. Dave Burns saying the iPhone SE screen is perfectly adequate, but if you want a banging screen, you can get the TCL. It would be nice, JJ, if we could get an iPhone SE 5G, but I would imagine, especially for Apple right now, that's at least $100 premium on how the market prices that stuff. Everyone's trying to drag me back to talking about the Velvet. I mean, I've got the Velvet here, and I have a review out on the Velvet. If we'd like to talk about the Velvet, that review could use some help getting shared. It's like I just said, man, do I love headphone jacks. It's good times. Dave Burns, the only reviewer who was nice to Google's phones last year. That's not true. There were a handful of folks out there. TK, I feel like, again, my brother from another mother. I really liked his commentary on phones last year and into this year, where, again, it's very thoughtful and it's very results focused. And that's the kind of content I like to watch. Don't complain about what a phone's lacking or how a phone's not good enough if you don't do things on a phone. Like, the Velvet is a great example of that. You know, a lot of people are treating the Velvet a lot kinder. It's a pretty phone, so now techies are treating it more seriously. Okay. But you still hear a lot of those dog whistles. And you'll watch someone say, like, oh, well, dual screen, what good is it? And you're like, well, what did you do on it? I did nothing on the dual screen, and I'm complaining that it's too cumbersome. Did you try gaming on it? I don't game on a phone, so dual screen's not worth it. Did you try editing video on it? Oh no, I do not edit video from my phones, so that as a usage scenario where the extra real estate would come in handy, not worth it. So what did you try on the dual screen? Well, I opened up a restaurant menu and I talked in my live chat. Okay, so you multitasked. Did you do anything else? I tried using Google Maps as one, you know, and the seam in between the two screens made Google Maps more difficult to use. When you had Google Maps in wide view on both screens on the Velvet, did you try turning the Velvet sideways? Oh no, I did not do that. I used it in portrait mode where the seam was more obvious so I could show it off on video that it's not good enough. Cool. I don't really feel that passes for informed gadget commentary. So I look at a dude like TK and he actually gets down to brass tacks. Like, here's how the pen works and here's how wide view works. And I do a ton of gaming on my phones. So I trust TK to talk about gaming on a phone with a bit more consideration. I'm way behind in the chat. Sorry, I'm going to try and scooch forward here. um someone plugging my book. If you'd like to learn more about smartphone photography, definitely be on the lookout for the updated version of Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, available on Amazon Kindle. Let's see. From Heike, could you get some serious bread and butter by writing articles to other tech outlets as a guest writer? I mean, I would really leave YouTube to be on its own and have some peace of mind. So I'm writing a script right now where I am considering what my options might be. I don't have a conclusion yet, but you're listening to me complain. I think it's pretty clear that something needs to change. And I am looking at a pivot. I'm looking at what should I do? And I'm not quite sure where I'll end up. But I'm getting, you know, since leaving Pocket Now and coming back to my own personal channel, some things have worked. Some things have been really encouraging. But most of this conversation has gotten more frustrating. And I'm just not having fun. You know, like I'm not having a good time, and I'm not reaching people that I think would appreciate some difference or some change in their conversation. At the same time, we've seen this review cycle radicalized. If you're not a part of day zero conversations, then you don't really get to contribute to the conversation. When I make a Pixel 4a video, I'm going to be immediately disregarded by the people that are overly focused on who had the first opinion on the Pixel 4a. So I have to spend so much more time in my videos untangling other criticisms of phones before I even really get to have a conversation about what I think. I get a lot of comments from people saying like, well, you should just focus on what you think about the phone and don't worry about all those other haters. But the problem is, if I don't untangle the established opinion on a gadget, then there's nothing for me to contribute. If I just say like, well, I had a different experience. Oh, but you're always saying this and you didn't say that and this is a problem and this other person said. Like, I've been in podcasts where people are holding the phone and talking about how some other tech blog had an opinion on that phone that was different than my opinion. And then I'd ask them, well, what did you think about the phone? You're literally holding it. Oh, well, I didn't try that feature. You're like, then why are you concerned that my opinion was different than another publication's? You know, like, they published a review first, and then I used the phone for a month and came up with a different conclusion. But we're still fixated on who got there first. And first isn't correct. First is almost always wrong in how these tech products evolve. If you go back and watch OnePlus 8 reviews from launch day, all the people that were embargo, all of those reviews are completely wrong and completely mischaracterize what the experience of using the phone today is like. And even my review, a month out, a couple things have evolved and changed from my review, where I even took time to talk about camera improvements and performance improvements and some of the screen improvements. That's how we should talk about tech. But that's not how we talk about tech. I am completely beholden to a review cycle that ends before I even get a chance to use the phone. So I'm looking at where else I can go and what else I can do and what other resources I have. But increasingly, like, I'm not leaving YouTube. I think I need to pivot my channel away from reviewing this stuff. I'm kind of inspired by Josh Vergara. Maybe it's more about feature videos and lifestyle conversations, or maybe like TK, where maybe it's just more feature examinations and tips and tricks and performance. You know, like it, I don't know what it means. I'm not quite sure where to go. So I'm going to be reaching out to the community and saying, like, well, what do we want to do? I started this whole gadget conversation to engage. Like, I'm not sitting here trying to be the conclusion of a conversation. I'm trying to be the start of a conversation. And I said I wasn't going to turn this into a bummer. But again, it's I mean, I want you to look at some of the people that really aren't making videos anymore. When was the last time you got a really good display analysis from Erica Griffin? When was the last time Flossie Carter, without you, like, you know, subscribing and smashing the bell icon and following his channel, you know, how often do his videos show up in your YouTube algorithm for topics that you care about? How many times have we lost really fun shows like Tech Thing, you know, or Patrick Norton going to being a commentator on other platforms instead of hosting his own shows? Like, it's pretty clear we've got some problems. It's just whether or not as an audience for this stuff, we're going to address any of those problems. Dave Burns, what should we talk about that's not a bummer? here, let me get this out of the way here. I do want to spend just a quick minute. We should plug the subreddit, and then let's close out the show talking about, you know, movies, music, TV, some fun stuff. I know I kind of teased that at the beginning, and then this Pixel conversation got a little out of my control. But we all knew I was going to ramble without a list. Gary the Fireman introducing the JCB debate channel. Oof. So I tried doing tech debate, and again, trying to do a formatted debate doesn't really work well on YouTube. If you just want people kind of yelling at each other, talking head style, like on MSNBC or on Fox, then it's great. But again, it's, are people sharing this content? If you want that kind of nuanced content, it's again, if it doesn't get shared and viewed and commented on, then it doesn't survive. Zenith. Yeah, apparently that blew up on my Discord. Hold on. Do I have the Misfit website? Let me pull that up. If you're shopping a smartwatch right now, this podcast not brought to you by Misfit Wearables, but here, let me screen share. You can get an Android Wear Snapdragon 3100 powered smartwatch for like $40. Is that what we're looking at? Ooh, look at this. Let's see. Get shopping VaporX for $40. I have no interest in buying yet another Android Wear OS watch. I'm really happy with my Tick watch, but view more. Ooh, look at this. The 41mm Misfit Vapor 2 you can get for $15 if you forego the watch band. $15 for a Snapdragon 3100. Okay, maybe I'll pick one up for $15. I don't know that I want the smaller one. I want the 44, but the 44mm only has the Snapdragon 2100, so it can't be worth it because it's an older chip. So that's the problem. Yeah, I do want to get into the subreddit. Let me get this out of the way here. Glowing Rectangles, my initiative to help promote content creators that deserve more attention. And this last week was an exciting week for exactly that mission. A number one with the bullet, Andrew Wallace, Mr. Fat Produce himself, sharing some thoughts on using the LG dual screen case on his V60, and he put together his own video. You know, again, it's the excitement of watching someone create content, making their own stuff, talking about tech, bringing a usage perspective. You know, this is someone who bought the phone, has been using the phone, and has some very interesting thoughts to share on the pros and cons of using a dual screen phone. Andrew found some concerns I had not considered. that video is really interesting to watch from the perspective of someone who just uses cool tech products. Andrew is not a reviewer. He did not get the phone for free. He didn't, you know, like have a bunch of PR sessions and then look at YouTube metrics before coming up with his opinion on something. It's the actual living with it perspective. So if you want a conversation about V60 and dual screen, that's not just, well, I tried opening two apps at the same time. Andrew has one of the more nuanced looks at dual screen cases I've ever seen. So it's commentary that, in my opinion, is way more valuable than someone who's going to pick up the Velvet for a week and then put it down to move on to more popular phones to help their YouTube ad revenue. But I digress. Number two, the LG Velvet from Spectacular Gadgets. Just a really fun video looking at, you know, again, the top two picks, you know, the top of the line LG, the mid-ranger LG, and then number three, yes, sir, Tanaso Lit, how to use a Canon DSLR as a webcam. Across the podcast with Issa Does Tech coming in at number four. Jason, Painfully Honest Tech, looking at the Razer Blade Pro 17, using that laptop for 2 weeks as his production machine. The Razer Opus headphones, better than I expected, coming from LFA Reviews. Senton Lano 9 posted this from Android Police on why you shouldn't import the Nord. My buddy Nick Gray looking at the OnePlus Nord versus the Pixel 4, not the 4A, but the Pixel 4. Some doofus in a punchable hat talking about smartphone video stabilization and gimbals. And then we've got Nord coming by way of Fandroid, Nord coming by way of TK Bay, Nord coming by way of TechSpurt, and all the way down to a vacuum cleaner from Issa Does Tech. And again, I love pointing this out because if we want to talk about tech and we want to talk about lifestyle, those are the kind of videos that I really enjoy making, but it sucks when I'm putting together this video and I know this video is just going to get savaged by the YouTube algorithm. I've got a whole bunch of stuff that I want to talk about. I am interested in, and I think is cool to talk about, but I'm going into it knowing with over 110,000 subscribers, I think I'm almost at 120,000 subscribers on YouTube, this video might get 1,500 views. I know for a fact that 1% of my audience is probably gonna actually be shown this video when they go through their YouTube feed to look for stuff to watch. And again, it's not like I'm saying everyone needs to watch all of my videos, but I know I'm kind of being separated from my subscribers, right? YouTube is promoting content in a way that isn't one-to-one with people who say they want to watch my stuff. And Dave Burns, Fandroid is awesome. I really like Nick's stuff. Again, LFA Reviews, if you love your ears, you should be following LFA. Issa Does Tech, a completely different conversation than you're probably used to about technology and style, lifestyle and style and how we use our tech. TechSpurt, really killing it on mid-ranger phone commentary. There's a broad conversation happening out there. So if you would like to help support your local content creator, one resource would be my subreddit. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We're over 1,000 subscribers. What are we at? 1,069. Nice. But we're getting more submissions every day. You're going to find a broad collection of different content creators. These are just the most top popular posts of the last week. There is a lot of commentary. Like Lover of Tech has been regularly featured. Voted up pretty high talking about cameras and mirrorless and Sony and vlogging, really inexpensive products, really cool smartwatches, commentary on Z Flip, Josh Vergara, TK Bay. I did this primer on M.2 and NVMe SSDs for Newegg, and that did not as well as I'd hoped it would. But again, if you want a broader collection of tech and commentary and lifestyle and just different perspectives rather than just, I had the phone for 3 days before the embargo lifted and here's why it's not worth it. And YouTube, you know, ad revenue means that's where my opinion is going to be focused on. There's a huge community out there. So look at your YouTube feed and maybe flesh it out a little. You know, maybe broaden with some channels that don't have 5 million subscribers or, you know, a ton of sponsored content. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We need your submissions. We need your upvotes. We need your comments. We need your participation, because if you want cool content, supporting it is the only way that we'll keep this stuff alive. Aditya Anil, hashtag Issa Tech Queen. Simon says, Hypno, YouTube promotes content it wants you to watch rather than showing what we subscribe to. YouTube's algorithm is very much like Facebook's. What's going to keep a consumer just streaming content on the platform? And for me, that's always the death of a social media platform. My Instagram usage has fallen off a cliff. I do not enjoy Instagram when I don't see posts as they happen. It's why, I mean, like, for all my philosophical problems with Twitter, I can still tell Twitter, show me chronological. Do not manipulate my feed to show me popular. I can't do that on Instagram. I can't do that on Facebook. Increasingly, it's getting more difficult to get that kind of a relationship with my YouTube buddies. It kills us as a community when a gatekeeper like Facebook or Google dictate what content you see in what order and basing it on some type of popularity metric. It warps our perspective on the conversations that we're having. So if we want to embrace this community and support this community, we have to do it ourselves. I don't know that I'll be, I don't know that I'll help you out here, Gary, but Gary says, all in favor of Juan doing the savage dance when he uses the word savage. I don't know that I'll be dancing on my streams. Sorry. I'm not ninja. So I can't follow that act. But maybe instead I'll do like a Pee-wee's Playhouse. It's the word of the day. Scream real loud. Aditya Anil, Instagram models are jealous of Juan's Faraday cage. Aditya is talking about my butt. Apparently, whenever I put a phone in my back pocket, my butt interrupts Bluetooth signals. And Dave Burns, if you want to see other people in your recommended, you have to tell YouTube you don't like the clickbaity, shallow content that's in trending. It takes effort. And that's what sucks, is YouTube is really low effort. YouTube trained us to just expect free content with a minimum of fuss. But now if we want to improve the selection of that content, it takes that kind of effort. So while we've got like another half hour and we can just kind of hang out and keep this real casual and chill, what have folks been watching out there? I pulled up my Netflix subscription and it's been really telling. Like the content that I've been rewatching. I had a conversation with Andrew offline. Andrew just finished another binge on Parks and Rec. And I did that at the beginning of this social distancing situation. But it's been tricky. I have had a really hard time going back to some of my older go-to properties. Two Spirits. I just saw we got new episodes of Umbrella Academy. I'm really curious to see where season two goes. But it used to be my comfort food would be like classic George Romero films, right? Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, even Land of the Dead, but not the other, like the quartet. Pretty solid once we get to Land of the Dead they're getting a little funky by that point. But I've had a really hard time lately. I mean, I think it's fair. We've been a little cooped up, and the fun of a good outbreak zombie film, not as fun. I watched Train to Busan. That movie is really good. That is a great zombie movie. I finished that film with a huge amount of respect for bringing some life and some humanity back to the zombie genre. And God, I mean, like, if Asian filmmaking isn't emotionally brutal, like, it's been a while since I've watched a gore fest zombie flick and like really felt for and cared for the characters, as opposed to just like, oh, well, here's the trope and that's the first person who's going to get eaten, and you know, no one's going to listen to the scientist guy in the lab coat. But Train to Busan, like, that kind of kicked my butt a little bit. And I finished the film kind of realizing, like, I was just aggressively emotional and not really, I didn't really enjoy it. Like, I didn't get that sick thrill that I get out of a good zombie film. Before, Simon says, Hypno, I've watched very little content as I can't afford the subscriptions since the lockdown move. Oh man, I'm sorry to hear that, Simon. Like, we've definitely been using streaming media as a crutch. Rue Sunshine, Dark is a cool series, exhausting like Westworld though. I'm anxious. Like, I really want to give Dark, a try. But what did I pull this back up here? So last night I watched Tread. It's a documentary about some guy who goes nuts in a small town and welds together like this massive armor-plated bulldozer and then just wreaks havoc on all these people that he feels have wronged him. There's no like grand conclusion. It's not like Tiger King, you know, like where it's this like amazingly awful schlocky documentary looking at some crazy over the top character. Tread is just a single documentary film. It's not a series, but it's nuts. You know, when you see someone and they start playing some of his clips, like how these other people in this small town did him wrong. And you're like, you're inclined to kind of go with them. You know, we know small towns and politics and like, oh, well, they didn't like this outsider and they tried to shut him down. But by the end of the documentary, you realize like, oh, this guy needed some help. When you're talking about armor plating a massive F off bulldozer and you're running over like the community library and the town council and like your rival's, you know, like little corner shop. Wow. Okay. That was this was an individual with some skill and some fortitude, but he really needed a good therapist. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. Oh, Dave Burns, I was watching The Family on Netflix, and the first episode really feels like I started watching something. It's The Family was rough. Because I walked into the family thinking it was fiction. The family is all talking about like religion in politics and how the church influences politics. And I saw the cast. And so they have all of these recreated moments. And I don't really love that. You know, it takes some of the truth out of a documentary when I feel like you dramatize too much of the real lives of people that you're following. But it took me the entire first episode to realize like, oh, this isn't a fictional drama of the church influencing politics. This is supposed to be in a real commentary on real churches influencing real politics. Dave Burns, Train to Busan is so good. Aditya Anil, just watching Snowpiercer. I love the fan theory that Snowpiercer is a sort of an unofficial sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That is one of my favorite, you know, fan theories. Dave Burns, watching Best of the Worst from Red Letter Media. Those are good streams. Let me get this out of the way here. Streaming. Simon says, Hypno, I spent 120 hours playing The Witcher 3, and I'm not finished yet. I need to go back and replay Witcher 3. I have so little time to really just sit down and focus in game, but I really need to find... like. So again, it, like all of this stuff got kind of interrupted. I was planning on Vampire. Vampire the Masquerade, their Bloodlines 2 still isn't out yet. And I was expecting it to be out by now. And that was going to be one of my big major, like I was planning on doing Twitch streams of that because I don't really use my Twitch for much other than this podcast. The other things that I've been going through, I've been streaming a ton of Halt and Catch Fire. If anyone's ever watched that show, it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy and nostalgic because I was a kid through a lot of those early days of like Motorola CPUs and the Apple II and DOS prompts and, you know, the early days of web browsers and the internet as some type of consumer facing business. Halt and Catch Fire is a phenomenal nerd series. The other, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say, like, I didn't realize that there were two more films in the series, but I finally finished the entire run of Ip Man. So a huge fan of Ip Man, and Donnie Yen is unbelievable. He is phenomenal. And the choreography in those films is fantastic. But I was real good. Ip Man 1 through 3. I saw that part 4 had come out, and you would think Netflix would put that on my radar. Like, I'm a huge fan of Hong Kong cinema, and like, I don't know how long it was on Netflix, but I finally got to see it on Netflix. And so I streamed all those. And then as soon as I finished Ip Man 4, they told me, they popped up as a suggested movie. Oh, you could also watch Master Z, which is sort of a spinoff that happens in between Ip Man 3 and Ip Man 4 with one of the characters from Ip Man 3. And I'm like, why wouldn't you tell me about this? I've watched like every other Hong Kong martial arts, even the, like the terrible, like, current you know, like Wesley Snipes movies and, you know, like oh, what's his name, the Falcon, crud, he played Spawn, and what I'm gonna have to look this up. IMDb Spawn. Oh, come on, I hate it when they... Michael Jai White. Oh. Like, I've watched every single Michael Jai White film on Netflix. Dynamite. Like, some phenomenal films. But, you know, like, I watch all of this, these like, cheesy, schlocky, over-the-top action flicks, and you don't tell me that there's a spinoff to Ip Man? Come on, Netflix. What are you doing? Vazicos 8 just finished Umbrella Academy Season 2. No spoilers, because I haven't even started it yet. Simon says, Hypno, I saw the documentary on Magic Leap. It was very good. Q3 Becker, will you be doing some late night video game streaming? I really need to. I had started, I pitched this to Newegg, and we started working on a concept for it, and then global pandemic. but I wanted to do a regular stream on mobile games and just mobile games. What don't suck? Actually, the name of the stream was going to be mobile games that don't suck. And just looking at how, you know, like Android has kind of become a place for older console and PC ports to go for the last audience share that they can get. So when a game's really popular on another platform, when it makes it to Android, like, that's still a viable option for people who might only own a phone. I don't know if you've been playing, but Dead Cells, loved playing it in every incarnation that I've played it on, and some of the tweaks that they've made to support phones. Dead Cells is such a fun roguelite. Platformer, great character upgrades. The whole point is that you're going to die a whole bunch and you go back to the beginning and you have to untangle like a new process to get to this next checkpoint or this next marker. I cannot recommend it enough. But, you know, all of the Rockstar games that are on Android, the 10 Tons, there's a developer, 10 Tons. They make Tesla versus Lovecraft, Neon Chrome, Undead Horde. These are great twin stick shooter and unit combat games. Just fantastic stuff. And like you can play them from your phone. I'm grinding on Anima right now. The major update that happened with Anima completely changed the meta for my warrior, where I had built him to be this kind of low damage but huge damage soak tank character. And now I'm going into boss fights and my weapons will fail. I'll never die. I mean, because I built him to be such a damage sponge, but you know, I'm just smashing this giant orc and like nothing's happening. And like, I've got to completely retinker my character now so he can do more damage. Anima is this sort of Diablo 2 Path of Exile wannabe, and it's only on Android and it's free to play, and you can give them a couple bucks for some quality of life improvements, just like Path of Exile. And like, this is a great game. Like it's genuinely a good, mobile game. So I wanted to do streams like that. I'm still talking to Newegg about trying, to do that. But at this point I'm thinking I'm kind of done waiting for them to maybe, flip that switch, and I might just start doing the streams on my own. And if they decide they want to pick up those streams, that'd be great. I could shift over to the Newegg Twitch channel instead. Aditya Anil, is Kung Fu Hustle a Hong Kong film? That's a very good question. I'm going to put that into Google. Is Kung Fu Hustle a Hong Kong film? Kung Fu Hustle is a co-production of the Beijing Film Studio and Hong Kong Star Overseas. So I would say yes. Build Monkey, I just recently finished watching all of It's Sunny, Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That is a lot. That is a lot to watch all of. Gary the Fireman, why is MASH not streaming? I would love to revisit MASH. Oh, man. That would be a good, like, again, there are some shows that are just so charming to go back and rewatch. For my wife, it's, she really likes Frasier. So we've had Frasier on quite a bit. Like I said, at the beginning of all of this, I did a sort of a re-binge on Parks and Rec. I really like the tone of Parks and Rec. You get to the end of that series and it's all about how can we sort of celebrate characters at their best, as opposed to always trying to make people like the butt of every joke. I think Parks and Rec walks that line really well. It's just sort of a more hopeful and more optimistic. I don't know. Did anyone see that terrible reunion for 30 Rock? It sucked some of the fun out of 30 Rock, the way that NBC did that show wrong. So they did this cast revisit reunion, and they made this like it was a special episode, but really it was just a huge advertisement for NBC's streaming service. And like it sucked all of the charm out of characters that I absolutely loved. I was really disappointed with how they did that. Mm. Oh, is MASH on Hulu? That'd be pretty cool. I could do MASH trivia for days. Simon says Hypno. MASH was shown on the BBC without a laugh track, and it makes it so much better. Did MASH keep a laugh track that whole time? You know the show that I mean, again, we're going to talk about BBC. The show that I really need to get a copy of again. I don't think I'm like blowing anyone's mind here, but when Netflix was just a DVD mailing service, I was one of those nerds who would get the discs and rip a copy on my own burnable DVDs and store all of that stuff in a giant like CD binder, right? And so I didn't keep a lot of that because, you know, there were lower quality rips and they were mostly standard definition DVDs. And my wife and I had started getting a few Blu-rays, but then streaming really took off and all of that stuff wasn't really worth it. You know, again, I would have binders of these burned DVDs. But the show I really wished I had kept was Red Dwarf, where I had the entire run of Red Dwarf on burned DVDs. And I should have ripped those into like MP4s that I could store on my NAS. And that is exactly the kind of, like, I'd love to just have that on in the background while I'm shooting B-roll or writing a script or something. I miss wrapping up every episode. It's cold outside. There isn't any atmosphere. Look outside. I absolutely love Red Dwarf. And again, I don't think there's any American facing streaming service that has Red Dwarf. I miss that. Hashtag some pirate guy. That's me. I was broke, man. I could barely afford, you know, Netflix DVD subscriptions. Two Spirits 411. I did that with Babylon 5. Oh man, that's another show. Like, I was talking to Andrew. I just recently went through, and Andrew had them on DVD. And you're like, I need to sit down and real properly watch through Babylon 5. Again, getting through the first season of Babylon 5 is always a chore. It's pretty rough there. I can still remember the first episode and how like stagey and presentational and cheap Star Trek-y it was. But I remember like getting into The Shadow and Vorlon Wars. Like, man, that show got real good. Matt Tyler, true story. Red Dwarf is one of the greatest shows ever made. It's shown weekly on Dave Channel in the UK. I never should have gotten rid of those. I mean, if I could have kept any DVDs from that era of me being broke, I should have held on to Red Dwarf. But at this point, I think I might just need to buy them. And I wonder if there's any Blu-ray collection on Red Dwarf. Kev K. Pym, me too, broke. Oh, Babylon 5. Simon says Hypno. One of the race of aliens look like the ancient alien dudes. That big fan hairdo. Again, it was a fun take on the Star Trek notion of aliens are just people with funny hair and makeup. Abhishek G85. I have spindles and spindles of burned DVDs full of TV shows and movies. I think we were all there, man. I think we were all there. Yeah, it's funny stuff. And it's funny just to see how those trends have kind of like morphed on us too. I really went in hard on streaming. Like, streaming. I'm down to pay this subscription. I no longer have to burn this content or pirate or file share. I'm not playing that game anymore. I want to give money to services, to products that are better services. And, you know, streaming is a better service than pirating that content. And now it's just like, it is such a pain in the butt to like find what's streaming on what platform. Do I have a subscription for it? Do I want to pay for a subscription for it? It's just rough, like navigating all of that. And it makes it less good. I'm not recommending people pirate stuff. Support content creators and support the products that you care about, that you enjoy. But I just, it's less fun to keep track of it. And it goes. I mean, I'm going through my Netflix here. Like some of the other things that I've watched recently, Dark Skies, that was kind of a fun alien abduction movie, Paranormal Activity, Airplane, Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. I've definitely got a trend on like old nostalgic films for me. Total Recall, Donnie Brasco. What else do we have? I did go through the Olympus Has Fallen movies. Gerard Butler kicking butt for America. Those are fun. The Politician was kind of an interesting show. I don't know that I'd say I really liked it. No, I would take that back. I liked it. I don't know that I would say I can heartily recommend it. But it's got Benji from Pitch Perfect, who's a Broadway trained singer, dancer, performer. But it's kind of like a TV show in modern age, talking about wokeness and generational issues. But it feels a lot like that Reese Witherspoon movie Election with Matthew Broderick. It's a really charming show. It's got a very charming vibe. I can't say I sat and watched it, but I had it on and I streamed through both season one. Season two just came out recently. And that was kind of an interesting diversion, like not something that I normally would put on and probably not really made for me. But I thought it was kind of cute. Like it's got a really fun vibe. It's got a really charming vibe. DTNL, Olympus Has Fallen is my favorite movie from that genre. Is the genre jingoistic celebration of tough dudes from America fighting against forces trying to overtake the White House? Is that the genre? Matt Tyler, look for Red Dwarf on Netflix USA. It's on the UK Netflix app. Netflix doesn't carry a lot of that UK content in the United States, but if I search for it right now, no. But I mean, like A number one, what it brings up is the IT Crowd, which is also an amazing show. The IT Crowd, when I still used to have ringtones on my phone, the IT Crowd theme song was my ringtone for a long time. It brings up the IT Crowd, Space Force, and then Doom Annihilation. Again, I don't really feel like Netflix is keeping a good bead on my viewing habits. Space Force was okay. I don't think it was great. I think it was misrepresented. They sold Space Force. Steve Carell is in charge of this new arm of this new branch of the armed services. You know, you've got the Air Force and the Navy and the Army and the Coast Guard, and then there's going to be the Space Force, like the Air Force. And they build it as being kind of a hijinky comedy, and it's not. There's some surprisingly touching moments between Steve Carell and I can't remember the other actor's name now. John Malkovich. Not what I was expecting it to be. So I can definitely appreciate, like, there were a bunch of reviews. Oh, Space Force, where are the laughs? And the show doesn't have that kind of tone. So it wasn't, again, I think it was misadvertised. I really enjoyed what it turned out to be, but it was not what I was expecting it to be. And Abhishek loved Space Force too, because Abhishek has good taste. Oh, ADTNL, Die Hard. Okay, so I mean, you're saying like one tough dude taking out opposing forces and insurmountable odds. Okay. I don't really feel Olympus Has Fallen is quite the same as Die Hard, because Die Hard set a standard for the genre, which is basically impossible to surpass. Die Hard is a perfect movie. It is a perfect action movie. It is a perfect comedy. It is a perfect Christmas film. But also, like, you know, for someone overcoming these overwhelming odds, I don't feel like Gerard Butler suffers like John McClane does in Die Hard.
You know, by the end of Die Hard, like, there's nothing left. This is a dude, his gas tank's running on empty, and he just can't really take any more abuse. You get to the end of Olympus Has Fallen, and Gerard Butler is, like, pristine. I've been shot, and I've been stabbed, and I've fought, like, 50 guys from North Korea, and I've killed them all, and I'm gonna jam this knife in your skull. And, like, he, like, walks out of the White House at the end of the film, like, yeah, America. Which is funny because it's Gerard Butler, but I digress. Aditya Anil, yes, Die Hard is a Christmas film. Oh, it's hilarious. Goran Petrovic, did anyone see the movie The Others with Nicole Kidman? Great movie. Again, it's a very solid ghost film. I don't think ghost films age well, and The Others, I think, does very well. And Dave Burns, again, anyone who would disagree with the sentiment that Die Hard is the best Christmas film is not a film fan. Like, it's fine. It's fine. You don't like movies if you don't like Die Hard. Nick Fell, Die Hard is the Christmas film for when you're sick of the sappy-ish for a month straight. So in our household, the two films that are must-watches every Christmas season are Die Hard and Scrooged with Bill Murray. Christmas traditions, we've got to watch those movies every Christmas, every holiday season that we get to the end of the year. Oh, Bad Santa is actually really good too. Bad Santa doesn't make it into our lineup as regularly as Scrooged, but most Christmas seasons will still also throw on Bad Santa and Elf. Those will make it in there too. Those are good times. I mean, again, there's like that periphery, like A Christmas Story is almost always on. Like, I don't know that we sit and watch it, but Christmas Story is always on. Christmas Vacation will almost always have that on. Elf. Again, there are some really fun grown-up holiday films. I don't try to stack Christmas with a bunch of It's a Wonderful Life's. Because the end of the holiday season, it gets a bit much, but Scrooged and Die Hard, mandatory viewing in our household. Dave Burns, I feel like everyone in lockdown needs to watch Groundhog Day. Do we? are we not kind of living it right now? So folks, I think we should probably put a cap on this. I just needed to hang out, a little venting, a little chatter. I'm super excited for Pixel 4a whenever those phones start shipping out and I can get my hands on them. I'm not excited for how YouTube is going to wreck my videos, but I am excited to have some fun conversations with tech fans that like to dig into some of the nuance on this stuff, and then also just for my own family. Some phones and some good options and some cool tech. We're kind of seeing the fruits of these conversations play out in real time. You know, like I'll jump on a conference call with, like, some of my wife's coworkers or with some of our extended relatives, and we get to contribute in a way that I don't think we've been able to do for a while. A friend of the family started asking me questions about, you know, voiceover and home recording and podcasting. And you're like, there's something interesting happening. You know, we're working at home. We're doing school, homeschooling. We're becoming a bit more modular in how we handle some of these challenges. And that's exciting. This is going to be a deflection point, you know, an adaptation point in how we use technology. And it's going to force some of us to really consider or reconsider those ideas that we had in the past for certain products, certain brands, certain services. And that's kind of cool. If anything else, like, I'm excited whenever we can see, you know, like, oh, something's changing. Something is we're adapting, or, you know, we're tired of overbuying or spending money over here when we could be looking at services over there. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. I don't even know if it's charged, but I need to, you know, reset up my iPhone SE. I need to make sure my TCL is ready to go. And then when I can get my hands on it, I think we're going to have some cool showdowns. I don't know if I'm ever going to spend time with a Nord, but it could be kind of interesting to also like see if we can mix up some of that conversation too. But I'm increasingly less excited about the prospect of 2 months out, here's what it was really like to make a review and use the phone and no one's watching. So instead, I think we're going to have to make some more timely stuff. I don't want to play the YouTube game, but we'll put our own spin on it. I've got a ton of audio stuff coming out. Been spending time with the Periodic Audio earbuds, some really interesting options from a boutique manufacturer. And then if you'll pardon the plug, this one is really special. Not this one. These are really special. I teased this last week, and I'm finally through writing the script. I started off 2020 trying to kick off a limited run series of hearing health and hearing technology videos. Hashtag 2020 hearing, you know, like 2020 vision in the year 2020, but focused on your hearing. Coming out of CES, we got word on some really cool products for hearables. So earbuds that help you hear and focus on things in your environment. So it's not just noise reduction, but it's like reducing noise and elevating human speech. All of those products got sort of delayed by this situation. They're now shipping it in my hands. So this is the Olive Union. This is a single ear earbud, which sort of splits the difference between a traditional earbud and a hearing aid. And then I've also got the follow-up. I did a series on these last year on the new Hira, and these are the new Hira IQ Buds Boost. So both of these products, in different ways, try to do something similar. Splitting the difference between consumer earbuds and professional medical-grade hearing aids. So I've got scripts written. The videos are going to get shot on these. Again, in that pipeline that I'm way behind finishing up some of this commentary, I feel like now's the right time to spend a little bit more time going back to my audio roots too. So again, I think this stuff is interesting. I know it's going to be destroyed by the YouTube algorithm, but I feel better about myself when I can contribute to conversations rather than just try and play the YouTube algorithm game. So, and a detail in ill. Thank you, one in the chat, for some super fun conversations. Thank you for joining. This was a rambly and off the cuff, and I didn't have a good plan for this podcast, but I'm glad that we were able to spend this time together. I'm really always happy to start off my week with this type of conversation and this type of chatter. I like spending time hanging out with you folks, and it's fun to again have a different kind of tech conversation than what I see sort of blasted on my YouTube feed. I'll be back next week with a more regimented, news focused links and articles and all that fun stuff conversation, but be on the lookout for a bunch of videos and articles. I have a showdown written between the TCL 10L and the Stylo 6, a budget battle around $200, just kind of whetting my appetite for a $350 Pixel. I have another Velvet video that's going to be coming out soon. So there's a lot. I just need to finish it. So, folks, I want you to have a fantastic week with your technology. I want you to do awesome. I want you to be awesome. Thanks so much for joining. And I hope to see you all here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Take care. Times are still crazy out there. Be safe. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take better photos. Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.